Appreciate everyone choosing to come here rather than go to the parade. Glad to have a good turnout. Before I start, I wanted to say there are some handouts in the back that include the PowerPoint. In addition to that is business cards as well as our social media cards for Nashville CPPW campaign. I will spend more time on our methods for implementing quarter stores than providing information on our CPPW campaign. So I encourage you to look at our website as well as some of our other materials to learn more about the specifics of our campaign. I also want to acknowledge Dr. Celia Larson-Pierce. She's our evaluator and was unable to attend today, so I'm presenting on her behalf. But I also want to recognize a few of our staff who really do the work on a daily basis, and that's Tracy Buck, Trevor Henderson, and Avery, who was our marketing person. But I also want to acknowledge one of our community partners, Juan Choi, who is a store owner who volunteered many, many hours of his time to ensure that we were successful with the stores that we worked with in Nashville. I also want to provide a little bit of context about the Nashville community. We are a southeastern city. You probably can tell by my accent. We're in the south. We're a metropolitan government, which means we include both the city and the county area. We have a population of about 600,000, and we are considered both urban and rural. I think you will hear some similarities between our efforts and perhaps some of our successes and challenges as perhaps Chicago or even Philadelphia, but Nashville is significantly different. We don't have as many traditional neighborhoods that you see either in Midwestern or Northeastern communities. We lack sidewalks in many, many of our communities, so it's quite a different environment to implement a corner store initiative, so I think that's critical. Another thing that's very important is that initially, as a health department, we contracted with a community nonprofit to implement the corner store initiative. Last year, around the same time, we came to an agreement that we would amend that contract and that the health department would lead the effort from that time forward. So essentially, you are seeing the outcomes and work that occurred really since fall of last year, not for the entirety of our CPPW project. So I think it demonstrates what can be done in a very short period of time. Talk a little bit about some of the things that were important about Nashville before we applied for CPPW and why we thought that we could implement a corner store initiative similar to bigger cities such as Philadelphia. We had some other things already going on, like mobile markets, but we did not have already an emphasis on a corner store initiative. So we had to make some decisions of whether or not this was the type of initiative that we thought would be successful in our community or potentially not successful. Clearly, as some other communities, we do have very large and high rates of obesity. Those are overlapped with areas of poverty and areas and communities of color, and also ethnic minority communities, primarily Latino community. We had three food deserts that had previously been identified, but honestly, those maps were probably more than 5 to 6 years old, and Nashville has a significantly shifting demographic with large incoming groups of both refugees and immigrants. We did have strong partnerships in communities, and when I say we, I say as a health department, we have a long history of working in and with the community, but as some other communities, because of changes in priorities or changes in funding, those relationships sort of ebb and tide over time, which is important. We also had Community Food Advocates, which was a nonprofit agency that had elevated the conversation around food dramatically over a 1 to 2 year period prior to our submission of our grant application. This is our objective. I'm not going to read it verbatim. Essentially, our focus was to increase shelving and access to foods within the communities with a focus on if you, provide access over time, coupled with other initiatives in the community and marketing strategies and communication strategies, then purchases would increase as well. This is actually a picture of one of our corner stores that previously was vacant and then became a very small store and now is actually classified as a convenience store because it's grown considerably. I'm going to talk specifically about our methods. I'm going to talk about refinement of our food desert maps. As I said, our maps were, in our opinion, somewhat dated. I'll talk a little bit about how we selected stores, which ones we anticipated would be more likely to be successful and sustainable over time, and then talk more about our implementation strategies as well as outcomes. This is just a map of our food desert areas. When we refined the maps, we realized there were truly four food desert areas. But in addition to that, the initial mapping was done at a time when this was, I would say, somewhat new science, and different communities were mapping in different ways, and there wasn't a national standard. And there's still a lot of conversation about what is a food desert, how do you define it, and so on. So we spent a lot of time working with Vanderbilt University as well as Tennessee State University to look at the maps that we had and to make adjustments, but also to go back into the community and look at the shifting demographics, because what we found is the initial maps identified primarily African American communities, but there was a significantly growing Latino community that, if we used the old maps, would have been really left out of the conversation in our planning process. We went back into the fields. We did an overlay of the number of corner stores within the food desert areas. There were initially approximately 89 stores. Many of those were what we call tobacco and beer stores, which means they sell nothing but tobacco and beer. The likelihood they're going to sell fruits and vegetables is slim to none. So we whittled that down, came up with about 20-something stores that sold other products besides beer and tobacco. And actually, that's what the signs say, beer and tobacco. That's how they're advertised. That's what they focus on, and that's how they make money. They also sell cigarettes individually, which is very profitable in our community. So we looked at the stores, we looked at how the stores were classified, we went into the community, walked through the community. Many of us have been in the field for many years, so we knew the neighborhoods well, but we went back out and did drive-bys, community assessments by going into the field, walking through the community, going into the store, talking with the store owners, and looking at specific assets. Specifically, whether there were sidewalks where an individual, particularly children, could easily access the store. Again, we don't have as many sidewalks as some other communities do. We looked at the proximity of child care facilities, churches, and other community organizations. And additionally, we looked at faith-based organizations in the community and parks and rec centers. We held listening sessions with community members. We worked with some community organization leaders, individual leaders in the community, as well as several faith-based leaders that they knew the community well, and we asked them to determine who should come to the focus groups, who should provide information to us, and that was very valuable. In addition to that, we conducted interviews with the store owners and developed strategies specific to each specific community. We then provided technical assistance based on the individual needs of that community or that particular store. Some of the things that were needed were structural support. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that because I think there was a big assumption going in that stores may need coolers or shelving and those kind of things. And that's actually what they did not want or need. One store needed some structural support. They needed many things like marketing materials, communication to the community, someone who would serve as a liaison to the community, because there was in four of the five stores a cultural difference between the store owner and the predominant population of that community. So they actually wanted entree and relationship with community members and trust building more than they wanted things or needed things like shelving or coolers. We also helped try to link to neighborhood partnerships, particularly with the faith community in communities where we knew there was exceptionally strong leadership from, particularly in the North Nashville community. Two of the ministers have a long history of promoting healthy eating, active living in that community, and are looked to for leadership by the remainder of the community. In addition to that, we work with the business community, but what's not listed here is we work very closely with the police department. Safety was listed as a concern, so we made connections with the police officer who was the liaison in that particular community. And then we worked on a marketing campaign in partnership with the community, with the community's input, as well as the proprietor's input, and connected that to the larger Nash Vitality campaign. We also did billboards, print ads, but found, as was mentioned earlier with farmers markets, word of mouth is actually what's preferred in many communities, and so it's getting people to talk to each other and getting the messaging out through relationships and communication. The assessment tools that we used, we did do, as I said, proprietor interviews and neighborhood listening sessions. We did pre and post store audits using the Nutrition Environment Measures Survey Corner Stores, which we call the NEMCS tool. It's the same tool that's used in Philadelphia. And we did pre and post measures with consumer intercepts using a standardized tool. Evaluation results. Some of the things I'm not going to list, they're in the PowerPoint, but I'm going to point out the things that I think were most important. Identified barriers based on the community members' input was the perception of crime or risk of crime in the communities in and around the stores at various times of the day. Some of those things are easily solved by lighting. One of the things that was pointed out is that the stores had so many ads in the windows for things like cigarettes that people couldn't see in the store or see out, which made them fearful of crime. So those are things that could be corrected and changed very easily without any cost whatsoever. Again, only one store needed a cooler, but what several stores needed was just sprucing up. We partnered with a local high school. Students for one of their community projects came in and built new shelving, painted shelves, painted walls, planted flowers out front, oiled the old wood floors, and completely changed the look of the store and made it much more inviting for others. Some of the strengths that were identified is that these were dense residential areas, but what was identified in all five areas where there were stores was there was significant community pride that there was a store in that community and a desire to work with the store owner to increase access for particularly children in the community. Some of the things that were identified that were barriers potentially was the need for communication, but that was both education, not only on the need for healthier food options, but also that it was available in that community. It was at a fair price and it was at good quality. There was also some identified mistrust of store owners. As I said, there were cultural differences between the community population and the store owners. There was also mistrust of the store owners and the community members. And then there was an expressed mistrust of government, and particularly what was government's business in stores? Why were we in the corner store business? When we did the audits, finally there were three stores that remain open currently. We had one store closed for financial reasons, another store that was actually doing exceptionally well. The store owner developed an illness and was not able to continue his store, unfortunately. All of the stores had an increase in availability of fruit, increased availability and variety of vegetables. I will also say quality was increased significantly. There was an increased availability of low-fat milk in two of the three stores and increased availability of whole wheat bread. This just shows, I think, how dramatic some of the increases were within these three stores. Again, this is really over less than a year's period of time. I think what's most important, and we were very pleased, we obviously didn't know how the outcomes would be as far as purchases made, so we did make sure that we did the intercept surveys around the same times of day that we had done them previously and looked at purchasing patterns of the customers going into the store. As you can see, there was an increased purchasing of fruit, increased purchasing of vegetables, but what we thought was really beneficial was that there was a decreased purchasing of chips and beverages, and when I say beverages, I mean those sugar sweetened type that we talk about a lot, as well as a decrease in pastries, so that would be like, you know, tasty cakes and those kind of things. So not only was there an increase in purchasing of healthy foods, but there was a decrease in purchasing of unhealthy food items. So lessons that we've learned to date really is to start small. There was this grand vision initially that there might be as many as 20-something stores in Nashville. That wasn't realistic when we went into the community and looked at the stores, but particularly looked at what the stores sold. And unfortunately, we did have a majority of stores that sold particularly tobacco and beer, and there was not a way to make those stores that you're going to want children to go in or family members to go in and make purchases. Community engagement is critical, and that engagement has to be with the customers themselves, leadership within the community, but also with police departments. Some cases we contacted Public Works to fix sidewalks if there were problems with sidewalks, so also engagement with your other departments that can assist with making a community more safe or appear to be more safe. It is important to seek expertise in retail marketing. I'm a very old and seasoned public health nurse. Retail marketing is not my expertise, so I did need to rely on others to help us. There were strong leaders in the community that assisted, but we reached out to the CDC. We reached out to other communities like Philadelphia and asked for help, and that was very beneficial to us. As much as feasible, use a standardized evaluation tool. This is, you know, a new way of doing business in public health, and as much as we can use similar tools, we can tell a collective story that shows that prevention does work. And prevention in Nashville, a small southeastern city, can work just like it can in Chicago and Philadelphia. So it's important that we share our story and that we have a powerful story. I can't underestimate communication, not only for marketing, but also to really highlight the champions within communities who are making a difference. It's important that the store owners be highlighted, whether it's in the newspaper or other places, so that individuals know that they're doing things well for their community. And then also coordination of efforts, which you heard earlier. And that was just a disclosure that this was obviously CPPW funded. And I look forward to questions later. Thank you.